You're with us for the morning show as we talk about higher ed and the pandemic. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So estimates by the UW system show the state's 13 universities and 13 branch campuses, they're expecting more than $200 million in losses related to the COVID-19 pandemic through the summer. In Manitowoc, Holy Family College announced last week it would close by the end of August, likely making it the first coronavirus-related campus closure in the state. So lots of entry points for our conversation here. Students, faculty, parents, feeder businesses to campuses. Let's hear from you. How has your college been affected? What does it mean for the fall for you? We're at 800-642-1234. Rich Kramer is a WPR reporter based in Eau Claire. Rich, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kate.
Well, let's take a bird's eye view first. What are the challenges out there that colleges and universities around the state are facing right now?
There's a lot of challenges. I mean, I'm scrambling to try to get a handle of it myself, but what I've been focusing on in the initial, you know, outbreak period, I guess, has been budgets. In March, campuses, you know, to try to prevent the spread of coronavirus and to keep it, you know, from working its way through the dormitories on their campuses, they sent students home or basically told them to stay home after extended spring break. So all classes were moved online or some other form, but not in person. So that created a humongous budget hole for these campuses, because room and board fees make up a big chunk of revenues for the UW system campuses. And along with that, you know, you think of every service support role on campus, from dining to you know, laptop checkouts, all sorts of things. So it's got all kinds of spillover effects that have really hurt these campuses.
Sports, another area where is a big revenue generator.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really keeping my eye on UW-Madison, because if Badger football is canceled for the entire season, that would be a game changer, I think, for that budget.
So as you watch how universities adjust, moving students rapidly to online delivery of classes, what have you found there in terms of how colleges are making this switch and how students are adjusting to it?
Well, that's one of the sort of feature stories that I wanted to get after and haven't been able to yet. But I follow some different student groups on the different campuses on Facebook, and I've seen some discussion on Twitter as well. Some students are giving – it just happens so quickly, and I know that students feel like their lives were upended, as they were. But in terms of effectiveness of these online classes, I've seen a wide range. You know, some students saying that their professors did a really good job of pivoting and they're doing the best they can. Others are saying that, you know, maybe some of these professors are not as well versed at online learning as they are to in-person class. You know, maybe older professors who don't have as much experience with technology. I mean, it's a really tall order, and to have it to switch within a week or 2 weeks is completely unprecedented within higher education, I would say. And it wasn't just the UW system that was dealing with this, of course, you know, private colleges as well. But, you know, the students, I'm working right now on a story about students that are about to graduate and go out into this really uncertain job market. And they describe a real sense of mourning after, especially for seniors, you know, their last semester. It's a really transformative experience, being able to walk across the stage, feel that accomplishment, that's all been taken away from them. And the students have really, you know, they feel that. And a lot of them say that they didn't even get to say goodbye to their close friends. So there's just like a million ways that this has impacted students, you know, faculty, staff, I mean, not to mention furloughs and all that, which I'm sure we'll get into here.
The whole campus community affected. Talking with Rich Kramer, who is a WPR reporter based in Eau Claire, we're looking at how higher ed is affected by the pandemic and what changes are in the works, what we've seen so far. With your questions, your concerns at 800-642-1234. Let's go to James now in Appleton. Hi, James.
Hello, thanks for putting me on the air. This is more of a concern of mine. I'm currently in a bachelor's online through UW-Stout. And so it was not, the whole thing wasn't when they went to no more classes on campus, didn't change anything for me. But now I'm concerned with, I realized this when I signed up for classes in the fall, things are filling up like a lot so much quicker. And my concern is with University of Wisconsin that with even though they could open the campuses back up, I have a feeling that a lot of students will want to do the online instead of going on to campus. And then that's going to like fill those classes up so quickly. And then there's the people like myself who are non-traditional, can't go to on campus classes, and then where's that going to leave us? You know, that's all I had to say.
Upend your trajectory in trying to complete that degree, trying to complete that bachelor's. Rich, what do you see there? How is the UW system looking at online courses, and are they filling up?
That's a really interesting point made by James. I'm going to have to look into that because that's a big question, right? Not just with UW system or higher education, but everything. I mean, we talk about when things go back to normal, you can't see it, but I'm doing air quotes right now. So I think that in higher ed, you know, they've been working towards trying to offer more online classes, more online degree options to get after students like James that are considered non-traditional, you know, not fresh out of high school, maybe working adults, et cetera, trying to finish off a degree that might have been started. So the UW system has been putting a lot of money into the infrastructure, the IT infrastructure, and through what's called the extended campus. And but that's a great question. What happens if the majority of students just prefer that? It's really hard to predict because a lot of students seem to be pining for being able to go back to in-person classes. UW system seems to be, I'm getting the sense that they expect enrollment, at least in-person enrollment, will be down in the fall just because of all the shakeups and because there's going to be some lingering concerns about this disease. And what I haven't heard, though, is that that's kind of forcing the students like James to have a harder time trying to enroll in classes that he was going to anyway. So that's fascinating. I'm definitely going to look into that.
So a real shifting marketplace for education delivery, and there could be some bottlenecks in the future as we see more students shifting online.
Absolutely. And, I mean, the shift has been happening for, you know, it's been happening for a decade, but it has really accelerated prior to the COVID-19 because of declining enrollment in general in higher education. There's all these projections that show that your traditional college age student that's like, you know, that's in the early 20s, they're going to be harder to find, fewer high school graduates, you know, demographics. So they've been trying to push online to kind of cure that. But now it's just been accelerated.
We're talking with WPR reporter Rich Kramer. Stays with us covering UW system developments, how higher ed is impacted by the pandemic. With your situation, are you a family with a student in college? How has the pandemic changed their plans? How are you adjusting? Are you an employee facing a furlough? What does that mean for your research, your livelihood, your financial stability? We're at 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about higher ed and the pandemic. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A national survey last month of high school juniors and seniors and their parents, it found that 4 out of 5 teens still plan to go to college. It's an increase from a January version of the survey. The survey is from student loan company Sallie Mae and market research firm Ipsos. Nearly 90% of respondents said they still believe college is an investment in a student's future. So how do you think Wisconsin colleges and universities will get through this difficult time? How is your education, your career in academia affected? Join in 800-642-1234. Rich Kramer is a WPR reporter based in Eau Claire, and he's following developments in higher ed. So, Rich, let's look at restructuring. UW System President Ray Cross talked about a major restructuring proposal to Regents, and he was discussing it on WISN's Upfront on Sunday.
In order for us to survive this, and in fact to thrive, to prepare for a future that's going to be quite different, we need to consolidate our services, we need to refine and become more distinctive in our institutional missions, and we need to have a much more unified strategic plan in order to provide online distance experiences.
So what exactly does a restructuring proposal look like? Do we have any specifics?
It's all pretty general at this point, and for current UW System President Ray Cross basically threw this plan out and described it as his vision for what happens post-COVID-19. But, you know, the last time that he put out a plan like this, the Regents voted on it right away, and it, you know, it was known as the restructure of late 2017, you know, 2018. That was the restructure that got rid of the two-year colleges and the UW Extension division and kind of merged that with other 4 years and, you know, services like WPR finding new homes within the UW system. So when, you know, college presidents don't generally put out these plans unless they, you know, there are things in motion to make it happen. So the specifics are light at this point and kind of general, but President Cross wants to address degree program duplications at all state campuses. And what that means, I'm not entirely sure, but it sounds like, you know, there's say philosophy majors at every single campus. Well, the question that President Cross seems to be asking is, are those necessary at every single campus? And with these online tools, maybe a student can take a virtual class from another campus where they have a philosophy department, or I don't know. I'm speaking, of course, theoretically here, but that seems to be, and again, the way they framed it is kind of more as a vision, not as a cost-cutting measure to address COVID-19. But I asked President Cross during, there was an interview that he gave with a few news outlets before all this news came out. And I asked him, will that be mean layoffs? And he said, well, layoffs will be inevitable. So they're going to try to streamline duplicated majors across campuses within the UW system. They want to centralize most human resources functions, information technology, and business functions like purchasing at a central office. So that also will likely mean a lot of layoffs on the campuses. And thirdly, his vision included creating a system-wide online education model. So right now, a lot of campuses offer online degree options or online classes that are more or less administered by themselves. So President Cross's vision is to have all of that run through the central office, UW System Administration, something called Extended Campus. And that also is just kind of a general point. We haven't seen specific examples of how that would work.
So centralizing your HR, your procurement, your IT, but also this model of centralizing some of your majors. I'm wondering, would there be lobbying on behalf of then each of the campuses to try to get their professors to be able to teach these courses? Who would win out?
Well, that's a good question. That's the $64,000 question. So the way the process seems to be unfolding is that, you know, President Cross said that the campuses will be in charge of identifying promising programs, you know, promising being programs that might not need to continue because they might be duplicated within a region or across the state. So the campuses have to do the work of figuring out which of these programs might be ready to be cut, I guess. But UW System Administration, which is kind of like the overseer of the entire group of campuses, they say that they're going to make the decision. It's going to be instead of kind of taking a support role, UW System Administration is going to be the manager here. They're going to actually make the decision. So there will definitely be some lobbying and campuses. That part of this also is to some people, it might not seem like a big deal, but campuses are being told to refine their mission statements and specialize, you know. So instead of just being a four-year liberal arts college, they want you to say, you know, just an example, a four-year liberal arts in engineering campus. You know, they want that specialization. So that'll be really interesting to see how these proposals come out. The timeline for all of this is very tight. President Cross, even though it's just a plan, he says it needs to be in effect by next fall. So it's another restructure that has to happen within a year's time. And as we saw in the last restructure proposal, they had to extend some of the deadlines because it took more than the year and a half that they had slated for that. So, and I guess in theory, this could go nowhere too, because President Cross is leaving. The makeup of the Board of Regents could change within the next year or so, but it seems like whenever a plan like this comes out, that the wheels are already in motion by the time the public gets their eyes on it.
So lots of flux. Talking with Rich Kramer, he is a WPR reporter based in Eau Claire. We're looking inside the situation in higher ed as the pandemic unfolds. With your questions along the way, 800-642-1234. So, Rich, last month, all 13 UW system campuses announced initial furlough plans for employees. What do we know about how campuses have chosen to address these furloughs?
We know a lot. The plans came out very slowly. They kind of trickled out, which made it a chore to try to wrangle it all into one news story. But in a sense, you've got these categories of furlough options that were authorized by the UW Board of Regents and kind of set out by the UW system. And basically you've got what are called intermittent furloughs. So those are for faculty members. That's maybe one day a month, one day every 2 months. And when I say day, that means an unpaid day off that you're not allowed to work. So that's the type of furloughs that faculty members and some educational administrative staff are getting. Then you've also got consecutive day furloughs, and that's, in a sense, you know, up to 3 months straight, unpaid time off. And that seems to be going towards some of the staff members that are not able to work remotely. Some of the staff members, like academics, not academic staff, I should take that back, like administrative staff, maybe in a budget purchasing office or something like that, or, you know, people that work at cafeterias on campus, something like that, grounds crews. So they're looking at up to four months of unpaid time off. The other thing that's been happening at some of the other campuses is a work reduction furlough. And in a sense, the UW system works with what's known as FTE, full-time equivalent. So you'll have this number attached to your job posting, and it'll be, you know, 0.5 FTE. So that means basically you're half-time or three-quarters time or something like that. So they're, in a sense, they're saying, all right, you're one FTE position right now. We're going to cut that to three-quarters or to half. Basically, they're reducing the number of hours that you get. So that's being used at some of the campuses. I know that's being used at UW-Platteville, but it's really the reactions are across the board because these campuses have different budget holes to fill. So it's been really interesting to watch, and I'm sure that this is just the first round.
Do we have any sense when the layoffs would come?
No, I mean, these campuses are very careful when they put these notes out. A lot of them are trying to stress the importance of trying to work with these furloughs to avoid permanent layoffs. But, you know, state revenue collections are tanking right now. And the next budget, I've heard from people within the UW system that they, while things are tough right now, they fully expect that the next budget is going to be pretty bad. Mm. So that means there is going to be more of this austerity necessary next year.
Rich, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Rich Kramer is a WPR reporter based in Eau Claire. And full disclosure here, Wisconsin Public Radio is part of the UW system. Coming up, we take a closer look at the pandemic moving through long-term care facilities. More than a third of Wisconsin's coronavirus deaths have occurred in places like nursing homes. We'll look at this evolving pattern with your questions and thoughts along the way. Join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Right now, we're checking in on the situation at nursing homes and senior living communities. They account for more than 40% of our state's coronavirus deaths. The Department of Health Services announced last week it'll be naming the nursing facilities that have cases of COVID-19. There are 123 facility investigations underway. Are you a resident in an assisted living community or at a nursing home? How has life changed for you during the pandemic? You can join in at any point here, 800-642-1234. Stephanie Shadid is president and CEO of Luther Manor. That's a nonprofit Christian senior community in Wauwatosa. Stephanie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you very much.
Well, give us a sense of your campus and the housing you provide and how many residents you have.
You bet. Luther Manor is nearly a 60-year-old community. We serve around 450 residents on any given day and have close to 400 full and part-time staff. Prior to the pandemic, we also were very blessed to have more than 300 volunteers that brought a lot of enrichment and activity into our campus.
I'm sure those volunteers have been so important to your mission up to this point. How are things since the pandemic? What has changed inside your doors?
Holy smokes. Well, what hasn't changed? What hasn't changed is the care and love and compassion, frankly, that I see every day with our staff, for one another, quite frankly, and how they've looked after each other, but also, of course, for our residents. Things have changed from the easiest things like where staff come into the building, the different locations, because now we are screening them for symptoms and fever twice a day. So we've had to restrict the locations they come in. So easy, simple things like that you do every day and don't necessarily even consider, all the way to the way that our residents enjoy meals. We have been under, I'll use the term loosely, quarantine since early March, and the residents themselves have really had to evolve in their mindset, try to find ways to entertain themselves. With us doing everything we possibly can, we've started streaming activities through our internal television channel. We're doing a lot more one-on-one activities with residents whenever we possibly can with the staff we have available. And we've redeployed some positions to do exactly that so our caregivers can focus on the clinical treatments and ensuring that the vitals that we take three times a day, which is even more than is recommended by CMS and the CDC, ensure that we're doing that for our residents to monitor even the smallest change in their condition so we can get ahead of any change.
Do you have enough personal protective equipment, PPE?
You know what? We do. And two reasons for that. I'll come right out and tell you that we did have a COVID positive case early in. It was a resident. And because we were screening so frequently, we found her temperature spike. She's doing well. I'll tell the listeners that she's recovered and back at Luther Manor.
And she's 89.
She's 89. She's a little bit of a hero and a legend right now,
I bet.
which is pretty cool. But because we were one of the first in the area to have a case, that put us in a different tier for access to PPE. So we worked very closely with the Department of Health. The Wauwatosa Department of Health in particular were phenomenal through this. The medical college has also been gracious in helping us with PPE. And then, of course, we've gotten some of the national supplies and then have been able to purchase some of our own.
How are staff doing? You're checking them twice a day. I'm sure that they're under quite a bit of stress to make sure that they are properly equipped with their PPE as they enter and exit the residents' rooms.
It's been a learning curve for everyone because it's an ongoing. It's every day we have to be using PPE in ways we hadn't before. Fortunately, you know, I call it fortunate. In our industry and throughout our entire campus, infection control and prevention is something we deal with every day and all year long. So the flu comes around every year. Other types of contagious disease come in and out of society all the time. And because of that, we have protocols in place. Our staff are already trained. They understand how they need to behave when we have a quarantine or a breakout of something. So that's the fortunate part, making sure that they're wearing their masks all day long, which can be challenging if you wear glasses, as an example, or if you have your own asthma, as an example. But staff have been unbelievable. Our turnover is the lowest it's ever been. They are committed to their residents. On days when I'm out taking temperatures and screening some of our staff, I thank them every day. Thanks for being here. And they look at me like, well, of course, that's what we do. They need us. What would they do if we didn't come to work?
It's a mission.
It's a mission.
We're talking with Stephanie Shadid. She is the head of Luther Manor. It's a nonprofit Christian senior community in Wauwatosa. We're looking at changes there amid the pandemic with your questions about the situation at nursing homes at 800-642-1234. How has the situation changed for your loved one in a senior community? What are they telling you? How are you still staying connected? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Stephanie, how are you handling new admissions to your long-term care facility and your assisted living as you try to get people in and out of your facilities and settled in?
Sure. Well, largely anything proactive in terms of a resident moving to our organization in a planned fashion have pretty much slowed to nearly nothing. So right now what we're seeing are admissions from people who require care. And that's coming in all areas of our continuum, even our independent living, certainly assisted living. That's definitely slowed. What we haven't seen too much of a change in is admissions into our rehabilitation center. Because we were early on in having to cope with changes because of COVID when we had our case, We have been working very closely with the Frederick Health System in particular, because that's our primary hospital system near us, to create an observation wing on our rehab unit we are now admitting people referred to as clinically resolved COVID positive. So these are folks who have passed the 7 or 10 day period of time, depending on their individual condition, when it's believed that they are no longer high risk of contagion. And we then are admitting them for continued recuperation outside of the hospital until they're well enough to either move back home or move to where they lived on Luther Manor's campus.
So that rehab situation where they're out of the care of the hospital and in a recovery type setting in rehab. Let's take a call now. Let's go to Michael joining us from Appleton. Hi, Michael.
Good morning. Good morning. You make everything sound so nicely balanced and logical and careful and responsible at Luther Manor and so forth. Whereas, is it not the case that assisted living and senior places and so forth within the state of Wisconsin and perhaps throughout the United States are seriously understaffed?
Michael, thanks for the call. Stephanie, what is the impact of staffing shortages and right now?
Sure. There definitely is a staffing shortage of caregivers and nurses. Frankly, this is a nationwide issue. We just have not seen as many people coming out of school and or interested in our lines of service in particular. So staffing is a challenge. And one of the major issues is compensation. So our ability to pay a caregiver or a nurse relative to where other areas that they could work in the industry is definitely a challenge, and it comes down to reimbursement rates. So what we're paid by Medicaid in particular, or even from insurance providers, is woefully low. At Luther Manor, we are a not-for-profit organization. We are a charitable organization. And on our Medicaid patients, for those that are on Title 19, we lose approximately between $90 and $100 a day because of Medicaid reimbursement.
Because of Medicaid reimbursement. Mm-hmm. Do you see any type of policy movement on this, any type of changes within government that have impacted your staffing levels?
Well, I sure hope so. You know, the government has done, state of Wisconsin has done a few things, and we did receive some reimbursement increases that are helping. There's also additional dollars for direct care compensation that come through the MCOs or family care. And that definitely helped, but it barely moved the needle. We continue to advocate for our society. I think one of the things that I believe is pretty highlighted through all of this pandemic is the critical nature of senior living communities, assisted living, skilled nursing, et cetera, in a new integrated healthcare system. That as we saw the hospitals shift away from 20-day stays to 2-, 3-, 4-day stays, where do we think those folks went? Some of them certainly went home. Many of them came into our facilities. Yet the reimbursement did not follow that high demand for clinical care.
And so that is then on your staff to continue a lot of those, you know, daily checks and medications and certainly, you know, a patient, a resident who has more complications as well. Have you had any staffers who have tested positive or have had symptoms?
We've had several staff who have symptoms. In fact, we are on a weekly basis testing residents who are symptomatic and also referring staff through our infection control nurse to their physicians to be tested. Fortunately, almost every single one of those has come back negative except for our first case. We currently have one part-time staff member who did test positive. She was not working at our facility during a period of time of any concern. So we've been incredibly fortunate. And I think that also goes to express the remarkable care and concern taken by organizations like Luther Manor to contain this virus. We all know how highly contagious it is. And to think about the fact that it isn't more rampant in facilities like ours is, to me, a testament of the high-quality care that's already going on.
Checking in on the situation at senior living facilities with Stephanie Shadid. She's president of Luther Manor in Wauwatosa. Do you work at a long-term care facility? What new precautions are you taking? Do you have the PPE you need? We're at 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Residents of nursing homes have accounted for a staggering proportion of COVID-19 deaths in our country. It's according to data gathered by healthcare researchers, nursing home deaths now account for more than half of all fatalities in 14 states, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation. Do you have a loved one in a senior living facility? How often do you talk with them? How are they doing? What can you tell us about their care and how their facility has responded? We're at 800-642-1234. Stephanie Shadid is with us. She is CEO of Luther Manor. That's a nonprofit senior community in Wauwatosa. So, Stephanie, the State Health Department plans to release the names of long-term care facilities that have had positive cases of the coronavirus. How do you feel about this release of information?
Well, I don't agree with it. You know, our industry already has significant rules and regulations around reporting both to the Department of Health, to the state, and also to families. And I know part of the motivation is, from what I've read, is to ensure that families are aware of what's happening in facilities. My suggestion would be that we focus on those facilities who aren't doing that and not unnecessarily raise concern in the public for facilities that have had cases. You know, just because there's been a case does not mean it's a poor quality facility. In fact, if there is only one, that is a sign of a remarkable facility because of the containment. So I don't agree with it. They're not doing it for other industries. I really do not understand the motivation. And between providers like myself, CEOs across the state, as well as our associations, we've really been pushing back, quite frankly.
Well, what should communication look like then with families? How do you talk with them about what is happening inside your facility?
Sure. Communication with families is critical. I mean, we are the frontline care every day and making sure that they understand what's happening on a regular basis. Put the pandemic aside is critically important. What we have done at Luther Manor and other facilities that I know that are doing it well, we put out a nightly email updating nearly 1,000 subscribers. This is something we launched when we went public with our first case. We committed to not just putting updates about bad news, but putting updates about everything going on. So we do that. We developed a hotline, a recorded message that we do every day for people to come in, created a coronavirus website with all different kinds of things. And frankly, it's gone from alerting them of issues to making them aware, especially responding to things in the media. And then finally, it's more of keeping them up to speed on how they can help and how they can be engaged.
And so that is a very rigorous new communication lines there with family. What have been the biggest questions you hear from family members who are on the outside of your campus?
You know, it's been interesting because I think I don't know that you can ever over-communicate, but I feel like we're over-communicating. And it's kept folks calm. People can reply to the email that we send out, and we respond to every question we get. The biggest question has come, in things like, more recently, it's how are you going to respond to the testing that the state is asking facilities to do? How are your staff holding up? And it's really gone from being panic to thank yous. We receive hundreds of thank yous and encouraging letters. We started an email campaign called Sharing God's Love, and people can email directly into that with encouragement and cards. We've had kids. We've had teenagers. It's been amazing.
Well, the state is calling to test all residents in long-term care facilities, all employees. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, from what we understand and all of the communication is there is a preference for that because of the concern about asymptomatic carriers. And because of that concern and the recommendation, they're making testing more widely available, although we didn't really have an issue with test availability. Frankly, what I'd like to see is quicker response time, so I believe that this will assist with that. In our community, every staff member has been wearing masks, and I believe that the majority, if not every single facility now, have their staff wearing masks, because that's how it's going to enter a community at this point, right? There's no other visitors coming in. Residents are only going out for the most essential visits, and then are being quarantined when they come back. So by watching for symptoms and signs, we know that that can be really critical, and then taking precautions, wearing our mask, washing our hands, using the other appropriate PPE when necessary. We're already doing all of those things and being very, very proactive about testing when we see any kinds of symptoms. So I'm concerned about needlessly testing every single person, and so we're waiting to see what happens.
Talking with Stephanie Shadid, she is president and CEO of Luther Manor. It is a senior community in Wauwatosa, which has 450 residents. You can join in with your questions about the situation at long-term care facilities. We're at 800-642-1234. Stephanie, have you talked with families who want to withdraw their resident, take them home or take them out of the community and care for them themselves during this time? And what have you advised in those situations?
Yeah, we have had that occur, especially early on when there was so much fear and concern and uncertainty about what this virus would do for people. We have had one or two residents whose families have taken them home. We've done it in conjunction with their physician, with the resident's physician. Some of these cases were where the individual, the resident here, was experiencing a good bit of confusion because of the change, or where a loved one felt that that one-on-one contact with their parent, in most cases, was really important. And almost all of it stemmed from the restriction on visitors. So we have so many family members who come in and see their loved one that breaking that continuity of that was concerning to some families.
Let's talk about end of life and how you've been addressing those situations with families so that they can be around their loved one. What is that like?
Sure. Oh, boy, that's a tough one. So for hospice residents who are eminent, which means very close to the end of their life, we are allowed to let visitors in, and we have to go through the protocol of screening them for symptoms, ensuring that they're wearing masks and other PPE that's required, and then allowing them to visit with their loved one. They need to be 18 or older, and again, show none of their own signs and symptoms. And it's heartbreaking, to be quite honest. And we've done everything we possibly can to ensure that they have the time they need and the privacy they need or the support and services that they need during that period of time. So it's been tough.
How are you holding up?
You know, now that we're, boy, how many weeks into all of this? Thank you for asking, first of all.
Yeah.
Pretty darn good right now. I have seen unbelievable things come from not just internally but externally in persistence and commitment and empowerment and creativity. Boy, staff have come forward with talents we didn't even know they had. So it's encouraging for me to see this angle of society when there's so much bad news out in the world, and then to feel just frankly the support and encouragement. So those are things that keep me going every day, and besides the fact that we have to care for our residents, and that's our number one priority. And other times I'm incredibly frustrated. But I am a glass half full person all the time. I believe I need to be as a leader. And so I view even the things that were happening with the Department of Health and they're wanting to call us out, et cetera, as opportunities to raise awareness of the incredible work that happens in facilities like ours and how critical they are to both the healthcare system and to society.
Stephanie, thank you for joining us.
You're so welcome. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you and your listeners.
Stephanie Shadid is president and CEO of Luther Manor. It is a nonprofit senior community in Wauwatosa. Just ahead, we talk with a professor at the UW-Madison School of Pharmacy who will answer your questions about how vaccines are developed. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.